The boat was where he'd left it. Kelly parked his car, taking out the suitcase, walked out the dock to Springer, and hopped aboard. Kelly slid open the door to the main salon and stopped dead when he heard a voice. "John Kelly, right?" "Who might you be?"
"Emmett Ryan. My partner, Tom Douglas."
"What can I do for you?"
"You can tell me why you've killed so many people," Ryan suggested. "If you think I've done it, then you know why."
"True. I'm looking for Henry Tucker at the moment. Corner of O'Donnell and Merman might be a good place to look."
"He's not going anywhere," Kelly told the detective.
Ryan shook his head.
"I have to take you in, you know."
"What for?"
"For murder, Mr. Kelly."
"No," Kelly shook his head. "It's only murder when innocent people die." A part of Ryan agreed with what he said.
"The law doesn't say that."
"I'm not asking you to forgive me. I won't be any more trouble to you. And I'm not going to any jail."
"I can't let you go," Ryan said, but his weapon wasn't out, Kelly saw.
What did that mean?
"Just what do you think you've accomplished?" Ryan asked. "This drug problem isn't going away."
"Henry Tucker won't kill any more girls. I accomplished that." Kelly paused.
"There's a cop at that building. I think he was dirty. Tucker and Piaggi shot him. Maybe he can come out of this a hero. There's a load of stuff there. It won't look too bad for your department that way."
"And thank God I didn't have to kill the cop."
"I'll give you one more. I know how Tucker was getting his stuff in," Kelly elaborated briefly.
"I just can't let you go," the detective said again, though part of him wished it was otherwise.
"Can you give me an hour?" Kelly asked.
"I know you'll keep looking."
"One hour. It'll make things better for everybody."
The request caught Ryan by surprise.
"We owe him something," his conscience said.
"You've got your hour. After that, I can recommend you to a good lawyer."
Ryan rose and headed for the door, then stopped.
"You spared when you could have killed, Mr. Kelly. That's why.
Your hour starts now."
Kelly didn't watch him leave. He hit his engine controls, warming up the diesels. He slipped his lines and pivoted the boat, heading out into the harbor. With the channel empty, Kelly set his autopilot and rushed to make the necessary preparations. He cut the corner at Bodkin Point. He had to. He knew who they'd send after him.
"The man sure didn't give me any slack," Kelly thought, seeing the Coast Guard cutter closing from starboard. Well, he'd asked for an hour, and an hour he'd received. It was a kind of race now. They were too closely matched. The other boat had a slight advantage since it was in the lead, while the cutter needed her half-knot speed advantage to draw closer so slowly. Areza watched the other man slide his boat across the waves and had to admire the man's skill. But this was deadly serious, with his men standing around carrying loaded guns. And now, what he had to do to a friend. No America's Cup race had ever been as exciting as this. And inwardly, Areza raged at the other man that the purpose of the race should be so perverse. His friend wanted for murdering people who needed killing. He had to let him run his race as best he could, take his shot at freedom, doomed though he might be. It was devilishly close, Kelly saw. The control for the pyro charge was next to him. 5 seconds after he hit that, the fuel tanks would blow. But that wasn't worth a damn with a Coast Guard cutter 200 yards back. Now what? Damn, but the guy was good, Kelly thought. Another mile and he'd be alongside, reducing Kelly's options to precisely zero. But he did have his plan now, seeing a looming freighter's bow partly exposed. Kelly looked back for the first time in this race, measuring distance, and it was damnably close. Areza saw the man's face looking back for the first time.
"It's time, my friend. Come on now, let's end this honorably. Maybe you'll get lucky and you'll get out after a while, and we can be friends again."
Then Kelly did something unexpected.
"Don't do it," Areza's mind shouted, suddenly, alone. This was no way for things to end. There was no honor in this.
Kelly eased his rudder right to catch the bow wave of the freighter and put the rudder over. Springer lurched to starboard from the force of the radical turn. Kelly reached for his air tank around which he'd strung six weight belts. Jesus, he thought instantly as Springer went over 90 degrees. I didn't check the depth. What if the water's not deep enough? Oh, God. Oh, Pam. The boat turned sharply to port. Areza watched, his mind blank, as the cruiser rode up on the curling wave and rolled completely over, her white hull instantly disappearing in the foaming forefoot of the cargo ship. It was no way for a seaman to die. The Coast Guard cutter backed down hard, rocking violently as she came to a stop. The freighter stopped at once, too, but it took fully 2 miles, and by that time, Areza and his cutter were poking through the wreckage. Searchlights came on in the gathering darkness, and the eyes of the Coast Guardsmen were grim. He was still alive. It was as much a surprise to Kelly as it would have been to Areza. He fought to strap the tank to his chest, then swam clear of the descending engines from what had seconds earlier been an expensive cruiser. Kelly could see the Coast Guard hull over to the east, and off to the west, the deeper shape of a sailboat. Pray God, the right one. Kelly swam towards it. His head broke the surface behind the sailboat, close enough to read the name. He went down again, then came up on the west side of the 26-footer. Hello? Jesus, is that you? Maxwell called. I think so. His hand reached up. The doyen of naval aviation reached over the side, hauled the bruised and sore body aboard, and directed him below. It made the papers in a big way. Detective Lieutenant Mark Charon, following up a lead on his own time, had stumbled into a drug lab and in the ensuing gun battle had lost his life in the line of duty, while ending those of two major traffickers. The coincidental escape of three young women resulted in the identification of one of the deceased traffickers as a particularly brutal murderer, which closed a number of cases in a convenient fashion. The only loose end which troubled Ritter greatly was making a single telephone call, but Ritter didn't want to cross Clark on something like that. 5 months later, Sandra O'Toole resigned her position at Johns Hopkins and moved to Virginia, where she took over a whole floor of the area's teaching hospital on the strength of a glowing recommendation from Professor Samuel Rosen. February 12, 1973. We are honored to have the opportunity to serve our country under difficult circumstances, Captain Jeremiah Denton said, ending a 34-word statement that rang across the ramp at Clark Air Force Base with, God bless America. How about that, the commentator said. Right there behind Captain Denton is Colonel Robin Zacharias of the Air Force. He's one of the 53 prisoners about whom we had no information until very recently, along with... John Clark didn't listen to the rest. He looked at the TV that sat on his wife's dresser in the bedroom, at the face of a man half a world away to whom he'd been much closer in body, closer still in spirit, not so long before. He saw the man embrace his wife after what had to be 5 years of separation. Kelly wept with them, seeing the man's face for the first time as a thing of animation, seeing the joy that really could replace pain, no matter how vast. He squeezed Sandy's hand so hard that he almost hurt it, until she rested it on her belly to feel the movement of their soon-to-be firstborn. The phone rang then, and Kelly was angry for the invasion of the moment, until he heard the voice. I hope you're proud of yourself, John, Dutch Maxwell said. We're getting all 20 back. I wanted to make sure you knew that. It wouldn't have happened without you. Thank you, sir. Kelly hung up. There was nothing else to be said. Who was that? Sandy asked. A friend, Kelly said, wiping his eyes as he turned to kiss his wife. from another life.
This has been a Random House Audiobooks presentation. We hope you have enjoyed this audio program. Other titles by Tom Clancy available on audio cassette from Random House are Patriot Games, read by Martin Sheen, and Red Storm Rising, read by F. Murray Abraham.